Senate Transportation come together. We recessed last night on hearing this airport bill, and we're back on the record. And we had a couple of questions. I'd like to note that Senator Wagner and Senator Olson and myself are here, and I expect other members to be here shortly. But in the interest of time, due to the fact that there may be a companion bill that some of our witnesses have to be at or should be at, or in the other body. So anyway, with that, why don't maybe I would like to, or Tom, did you have some questions?
I've got a couple of questions. One of them has to do with the
Senator Wagner, and did I say who was here? Senator Olson and myself are here. So with that, Senator Wagner.
I've got questions on two topics, and maybe the commissioner would like to answer them, or maybe he's got somebody else would like to answer them. One of them has to deal with self-insuring, and the other has to deal with the airport authority. So I guess he's coming to the podium, so.
And I would like to, just to add to, I've been questioned when we approve this, it's my understanding that the project, if it proceeds on schedule, is scheduled to be complete on C by May, no later than June of 2004.
That's the correct, Senator.
Is that a correct statement?
That's correct. That's the plan.
Yeah. With that, if you can.
I guess, Commissioner, I know it wasn't under your watch or any of this administration's watch. It was under the Knowles-Ulmer administration. Why, I mean, and I think I know why they decided to self-insure on this thing. But in the future, what are we going to do on major projects again? There are a lot of advantages to self-insuring. There are a lot of disadvantages we're finding out. So what's your take on that situation?
I need Dave Eberle to be happy.
Okay.
Pull another chair up.
This is like where I come from, the Indians play a stick game. And you don't want to play it with them because they just pass it around.
You give the commissioner the hard chair, huh?
That's all right.
We'll switch.
He needs the soft chair. Yeah. He's getting pretty raw.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Dave Eberle here, and I, Senator, I believe I can respond to your question.
Okay.
We are not self-insured. What we put together was an owner-furnished insurance, owner-controlled insurance program, where the state placed the insurance with an insurance carrier. So we do have insurance. It's not self-insurance. The state's not picking up the tab. What we did is consolidate all of the contractors' insurance under an owner-controlled program, and we placed one policy that covers all contractors instead of all contractors independently placing policies and costing more. So working with the Division of Risk Management, we brought in insurance carriers, and they gave us quotes on insurance to cover all of the contracts related to the major project. So the net result is that the cost to the state is less for the equivalent insurance.
Maybe.
Could I just, in hindsight, was that a good idea?
I believe it was, yes. We still have the equivalent amount of insurance.
But you're not going to cover the losses with the amount. The limits of the insurance.
The limits of the insurance, you could debate whether we have adequate limits.
Yeah, and that, Mr. Right. Chairman, that's where I was going with this, because apparently we have a $10 million insurance policy and we got a $20
million
loss.
30 million.
Is it up to 30 now?
I think that's pretty close.
So maybe then the state underestimated and underinsured then.
And
I know there's some unforeseen
right.
things.
You could argue that, but it's very seldom you have to tap an E&O policy. And we debated on what limits we should get. We selected basically the same limits that the Healy clean coal plant had at that time, which was $10 million. More insurance was available, the premiums higher, It's a question of how much you want to invest in insurance. Like I say, typically you don't tap the insurance, it's not a problem, but in this case, it turned out to be a problem.
I'd like to note that the Senator Terrio has joined us. And go ahead, you have.
So I guess the other question I'm asking, you have the insurance, and you do they have a bond in addition to the insurance? Do they have E&O insurance as part of our policy or as part of another policy? What's the status of those two?
Typically, in the design industry, they will carry a general E&O policy to cover the design firm. It's pretty minimal, though. It's like $1 million. And then as design firms sign up for major projects, part of that project cost, if the owner chooses, is to pick up an insurance policy just for that project. So either way, we end up paying for the E&O policy for that particular project. And the question is, what limits do we want? And do we place the insurance or do they place the insurance? And those are really the only questions that are out there.
So, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
So, this insurance program the state had also insured the design company owner, errors and omissions?
As a separate policy, yes. We also placed the E&O policy for the project.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think we're pretty underinsured. You know, I used to do the same thing when I was a subcontractor. I'd be required to have a certain amount of insurance, plus in addition to that, I'd have a certain amount of a bond that if I didn't perform according to contract, the company would come back on my bond. And I think we need, for the construction portion of it. So, I think, and that, Mr. Chairman, if I may, that brings me to my second point, and I'd like Commissioner maybe needs to answer this. What, in your mind, can we do to avoid these type of situations in the future? Is the possibility of maybe creating a airport authority or a port authority for the airports in Fairbanks and Anchorage a viable alternative, or some place? I think somebody dropped the ball on this thing. So,
well, I don't think the management. I mean, whether it's an authority or not an authority, I don't think would have much bearing. I think, you know, the problem needs to be addressed and fixed, and I think that an authority would have to deal with exactly the same issues that the state has to deal with in this regard. You know, there's some things that we need to do to be sure this doesn't happen again. You know, we need to review the entire management of the project, I think, and determine what might need to be changed there. We need to get more involved with the third-party design reviews. Just a number of things that contributed to this, and we need to get them identified and addressed.
Well, all I was thinking is if we created an airport authority, that would be it. Some people would look at that maybe as an additional bureaucratic control, but I'm looking for some way to change the process and have a review in the process that may prohibit some of these things happening. That's all I'm looking for.
I intend to have hearings in Anchorage in the interim to address this. And I made a go ahead. I said there was a $30 million error. I think some of this cost overrun is not totally error. Am I correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Did you kind of, one of you, get in what the $30 million cost overrun is?
Maybe go ahead.
The $33 million is related to the permit delays. and the majority of that stems from the design problems and the permitting problems that resulted from the design problems. All of that impacting the contractor's schedule and dragging out the construction duration for about 21 months. That's what generated the cost. So if you trace those costs back, they originate to the design problem.
Well, I think we all agree that the past administration had probably left not only this mess, but we have some others that we're trying to address, but there's no future in looking in the past. You know, we gotta face what we got right now. And I think, and I'd just like to get everybody on the record so they understand this, I do, Kaufman Engineers were the design people in this project, and they've designed Concourse C, is that correct?
They were the structural design engineer.
Yeah, structural.
As a subcontractor to McCool Carlson, who was the lead architect firm.
And Kaufman, I mean, even if we wanted to, it wouldn't be prudent to, we have to deal with them, or should, because there's not an engineering firm in the world would put their stamp of approval on somebody else's design here without quite a bit of cost involved in getting that done. And so I assume that Kaufman were going to finish out the project as designed.
Right.
And the big problem was not in the major design, it was in the seismic structure problems that we had. Is that true?
Mr. Chairman, that was the source of the significant problems that led to the permit delays was the structural design and the issues surrounding the model and the municipality's interpretation of the code versus the designer's interpretation of the code. That's what gave rise to the permit delay problem.
It was right.
That, as we pursue our claim, the experts will line up and tell us who was right.
Will the municipality have any liability in this?
My belief is no.
They had a code that wasn't followed? I mean, is that what you think?
That's basically their position. I might add one thing, Senator Wagner, that there was a legislative audit on the issue of the permit delays and the cause of that, and there were some recommendations related to that. And in that recommendation was basically that the current statute, which puts us under the permitting authority of the local jurisdiction, the recommendation is that be made more flexible, that the state could elect to do it through a third-party review on major projects in lieu of having to put the control, if you will, under the local municipality. That way, on a third-party review scenario, we could bring whatever resources are necessary to do the review in a more timely fashion, which could have helped us considerably.
Well, is there some legislation being developed for
Representative Roeperk, I believe, introduced a bill this session several weeks ago, House Bill 264. I'm not sure the status of that.
Well, I'm not really sure. I would like to have staff get their copy of that or help us get a copy of that audit. And I'm not really certain that it's not best. I mean, I think the local codes should be followed. And I knew, and I worked with you and as well as the municipality when this was happening to try to hear both sides from an open mind. I believe the municipality, I don't care who you would have had do that, the codes as they existed wasn't followed.
I'm not suggesting that we'd be exempted from the local codes. The codes would still apply. It's a question of whether the municipality does the review or whether you have a third party do the review.
Which would be the most expensive?
In this case, the way it was done was the most expensive because we paid the municipality to review it. And because they couldn't reach consensus with our designer, we ended up hiring a third party to come in also. So we paid both. It'd be much easier to pay once up front.
Well, as I recall it, you had a third party in because there was a lot of compromise from the municipality too into this, from what they first went in.
It was to try to bring resolution to it, that's correct.
Any more questions? Senator Olson has some questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm not sure who you want to answer the questions, but I would assume it'd be going to the commissioner. Commissioner Barton, as we look at the whole issue, obviously the, I really don't have anything to play in this because I'm a senator from a completely different region. But it did become aware that somewhere along the way, general aviation was being impacted by this. Obviously, with people that are flying in with small aircraft from my area, they wanted to go ahead and have a voice in what was going on down there. But then the native corporations and those kind of people called me up and says that we do indeed have a financial interest in the stake in what goes on there at Anchorage International Airport related to some of the, what most people consider as quite high ticket prices that a person gets on the jet there in Kotzebue or Barrow. He's, part of that obviously goes to a landing fee or a takeoff fee, as was pointed out yesterday by Mr. Surratt. And so that's when I started looking at a little closer. But some of the more emotional or passionate phone calls that I was getting that were related to their particular distaste for what was going on, they had to do with the Charlie parking issue, that they thought that, or at least their complaint was that, you know, when a small aircraft flies in from Sleep Mute to get his wife on the jet there, the transient area there that's just adjacent to Victor Taxiway, was being eliminated in for a field maintenance facility. Now, the field maintenance facility, as we've looked at it, first of all, I was wondering what the status of that was and what tends to be the future of that.
Let me address that first, and then I may ask Mort to follow up. But first, there's no plan to eliminate Victor Taxiway. There was a drawing prepared by the Corps of Engineers for the Corps of Engineers for a completely different purpose that didn't show Victor Taxiway on it. But in fact, we have no plans to eliminate Victor Taxiway. In regards to the field maintenance facility, as you know, I've been looking at that. My view, that facility is needed. If you look at that maintenance facility now, we have some code problems with it, perhaps some OSHA problems, but more importantly, we've got row after row of very high-priced equipment sitting out in the weather. Now, I'm not convinced that it needs to go on the site that we have selected, although we did examine seven sites, and this was the consensus site. But I have that under review, you know, and that's not part of the C concourse completion, though. But I do believe we need that facility at some point in time. It's just where to put it is the question.
This bond, just to make double clear, what we're doing here today has no impact on the maintenance. So
that's correct.
I think that I agree with you that there needs to be some type of, if you've got a $500,000 piece of equipment out there, the last thing I wanted to be doing is that thing eroding away because of the weather. I agree that there needs to be a facility. Certainly, it has certainly the issue of, and the key point here is where the facility is going to be located.
And I'm looking at that. Harkening back to one of my prior lives, FAA, in the case of the Juneau Airport, indicated they weren't going to buy any more equipment for the Juneau Airport till we could get it out of the weather. and I've, you know, they haven't said that about Anchorage, but have that stuff sitting out there, eroding away, as you say, is not right. It's not a wise use of the public's money, or anybody's money. Further, you know, in having to work on that equipment, particularly in the wintertime, spend an hour or two just getting the stuff thawed out so you can get it out on the runway. So I truly believe we need it. I'm looking at the site.
Okay, so as far as the facility goes, when somebody calls me from Anchorage and says, hey, you know, what is the status? What can I tell them?
That we're evaluating the location of the facility.
Evaluating the location or the relocation?
Well, the relocation. We're evaluating the site. Trying to determine whether we have it properly sited and whether or not we ought to move to a different site with it.
Okay.
Is it possible, I'm sorry to interrupt you there, Senator, but is it possible it could stay where it's at?
It's possible. Yeah. Yeah. I know the senator's concerns, and I'd like to go walk the ground with the senator and see what we can figure out.
I can continue, Mr. Chairman. As we look at some of the other issues related to Victor Taxiway that you've already brought up, one of the issues is the restriction of aircraft going down Victor Taxiway, which is the only connection between some of the lift facilities that are around Lakewood or on the float pond there, as well as the Lakewood Strip. There is an apparent concern that the Victor Taxiway is being, how was the voice to me, was the place was being choked off there because of this quick turn facility, and specifically related to the fuel pump area that was starting to infringe on some of the aircraft that got longer wingspans to transit between the two areas. What are the future plans for this quick turn facility?
I'd ask Mort Plum to address that.
Well, Mort is, and I would like to ask maybe Kip too, to explain to the members here the voting arrangements afterwards, how they vote these projects, and what a negative vote, no participation means, all of this kind of thing. It's a strange way. I don't think we are accustomed to it that way in the legislature. So anyway. Mort?
Mr. Chairman, Mort Plum, Director of Ted Stevens Anchorage International Airport. it would probably be good, as the Commissioner said, to go back and walk the ground. Since yesterday, I had some material that has been provided to us with regard to Group 1, Group 2, and Group 3 aircraft. The taxiway is 50 feet wide, and so you could get a Group 3 aircraft on there.
To explain what Group 3 aircraft.
Oh, excuse me. That is by a category of wingspan. To address Senator Olson's question of the quick turn facility and the fuel pumping area, which are both 66 feet from center line, that is the same distance as the current blast fence is from the center line. So the blast fence, which has been there for some time, and frankly, I'm not sure how long, but it's been there for quite a while, with the QTF and the fuel pumping area and the proposed fuel maintenance area, none of those would be any closer than the current blast fence. There are some restrictions that are a little closer there, such as stop signs and guardrails and things like that. And I think maybe we could take a particular aircraft and try and work to see, you know, if there's an issue with a particular aircraft. But I do believe there are restrictions by other obstacles much closer to that taxiway, which would restrict the wingspan as opposed to the blast fence or the QTF.
What we got there now, is that I thought that was considered a temporary
There probably has been some confusion. The Victor Taxiway, a piece of that was closed while they did construction on the QTF. That is now open. There were barriers there. So there were some concerns of when that would be opened up, and that is now opened up. And if Senator Olson would like, I could work with your aviation expert and try and make sure that I've put this into an acceptable format for you.
Well, certainly if you've got a 50-foot wingspan of something that can go through there, you know, a Taylor craft, which is a two-seat fabric-covered airplane, has got a wingspan of 46 feet. I mean, you're starting to get down to a pretty small-sized aircraft. Certainly there are aircraft as the wingspan goes up. You know, I think those are somewhat concerning that you're starting to indeed, no matter what goes on, look like you are tending to choke it off. And when you start putting things like stop signs in there, it's easy to pull a stop sign out. That's a
sure.
That's a nothing like starting to put something in there. That's, was that QTF is a $10 million facility? Relocate a stop sign compared to relocating a facility like that, there's no comparison.
Mr. Chairman, what I was trying to convey is that those obstacles which I identified have been there for years. And so anything that had been taxiing down the taxiway before can still taxi there today.
The point, Mr. Chairman, is the Coutume facility, that has not been there for years.
No, sir.
Tell me when it was constructed.
Well, that was constructed this year. You're correct, yes. But it is...
And that is the concern. And I'm not sure. Is it a $10 million facility?
It is. I don't have the exact figure out to get. It is $8 million and
whatever.
Some addition.
Sure. And so when you start building something like that, it tends to, at least in my mind, think of permanency. And once it has its own area there, that's what... it's not like some of these other guardrails and things like that can be changed. So what are the long-term plans for this quick-turn facility? Is it indeed a permanent structure?
Yes, sir. Oh, yes, sir.
If we were in 10 years, how much money do you think is going to be put into that facility?
How much more money?
Yes.
Other than routine maintenance and utilities, I don't know of anything. It's a
you're not putting in bigger tanks, you're not putting in more pumps, you're not putting in a different kind of tanks with the new diesel regulations that are coming out here.
If it's driven by environmental compliance, we would probably have to do that. But I don't. There's nothing on our plans currently that call for doing any more to the quick turn facility than is right there. To my knowledge, pieces of it may still be being constructed. Asphalt, for example, the asphalt plants aren't open, so the asphalt's not there yet.
Okay, if we were to move it now compared to move it to 10 years from now, what type of savings is there going to be? What kind of complications, first of all, do you see? Maybe you don't have the answer to it. I don't know.
No, sir, I don't have the answer. I don't.
And that's all you can say. The last thing, Mr. Chairman, if I could, has to do with some of the tie-down, I'm not sure if it's a tie-down fee, but there apparently was a proposed rate change in the lease areas for people that have put up hangar spaces, and those kind of issues. And throughout the hearings that we've had, it's always been referred to that the airport is going to pay for its own way, related to some of these revenue bonds where the airline is going to pay their fair share or is going to pay a majority of what's going on there, of some of these cost overruns or some of the improvements that are non-general aviation, directly general aviation related. And in the recent past, maybe as within the last month or two, there's been a letter that's gone out to the lessees on the airport that their rates are going to be going up by 50%. And so as I have, it's been interpreted to me, I've been told that these cost overruns, the money that's being generated is now on the backs of the small operators that are out there. And quite frankly, I tend to agree with them, that there is certainly a shortage of money throughout the state and a very big shortage of funding here with the terminal facility. Now the cost is being borne by the 197 or so lessees that are out there.
Let me ask Deputy Commissioner Kip Knutson to respond to that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I'm the lucky one to have my name and telephone number on that notice of rate increase. A little bit of history. There were two things occurring back in 99 at the state government level. One was the department was rewriting Title 17 regulations. And that's that title deals with land rental. There is a section of the title which deals with the international system, and then there's one that deals with the rural. The international system was promulgated, I believe, about 2 years ago. It has a process and a procedure for rate setting on all types of different fees. It outlines how you proceed, and we are following those regulations in this rent increase on land at the internationals. The second issue that was occurring is that the operating agreement was up for negotiation between the signatory carriers and the airport.
Oh, with the AOA?
Yes, the airport operating agreement. During that negotiation, the signatory airlines were looking for ways to spread some of the costs across other fee payers, because they had a perception that the percentage of non-airline revenues, pure non-airline revenues, were too low for our airport. So one of the things they asked is that we that the state raise the land rents from 6 cents per square foot to 9 cents per square foot, and then for auxiliary uses, which is rental cars and other types of aviation-related but not specific aviation businesses, would raise from 9 cents to 12 cents. Now that suggestion was made because that would be the first time in 30 years that the international airports would have raised their land rent. So people with land leases at those airports have been paying 6 cents for over 30 years now. Yes, it is a 50% increase that's being proposed, but I kind of liken it to me renting an apartment here in Juneau for $100 and my landlord coming in and saying I'm going to raise it to 150. When it's really worth $1,000. Anchorage did a fair market value assessment, I believe, in 95 or 96, and the land rents suggested at that time were 45 cents per square foot. So the aviation proposal of 9 cents and the auxiliary at 12 are still just a fraction of what the fair market value would be. Now, I understand that you know, any increased expense to a business is bad news. Most of the signatory airlines have the largest land leases at the airport. FedEx, Alaska Airlines, Air Aviation, Pan Air, they all have huge amounts of land at the airport, and they're the ones that requested the fee increase. So once again, they will be bearing the lion's share of the land rent increase as well. There are several individuals who have leases where they've recently built hangars, et cetera, and they will bear in the cost increase. One note, per the title on land leases, you can only increase the amount 10% in the first 5 years of a lease. So quite a few leaseholders will not experience the full 50% jump. There will be a stage-in period. Those notices are on their way out to the landholders now, so everybody will know specifically what fee they're going to have to pay in July.
Sure. So if I'm hearing you correctly, this increase does not hit all leasees equally?
It depends on their lease term, and that's per the regulations. It's a bit of a bizarre construct, but I think the theory behind it was that if you had enjoyed a land lease for longer than 5 years, you had enjoyed a low rate for a longer period of time. If you were a new leaseholder, you had just gotten into the land lease, you hadn't enjoyed a lower rate, so it was less fair to increase your land rent on a shorter term, or, you know, a newer lease than it would be for, well, let's say, ERA has had a land lease for the last 30 years, which is the case, and they'd never paid any increase. Would you expect to phase them in, or are they just available to increase their rent, land rent right away?
I think that's kind of an unfair analogy, though, because they're not on the South Airport, right?
Well, it's land on all of the airports.
But I'm looking at more some of the other issues where you have other leases that are there. Kitchen, for example, is certainly downsizing. I don't think their land area is necessarily downsizing. In fact, it looks like they are, certainly their business opportunities are less promising than someplace else.
It's never a good time to raise fees, especially in a bad industry cycle, but it's something that the signatories in specific asked for, and they're, like I said, they are the ones that are going to pay the brunt of the increase.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, indeed, it is indeed true that the small guy is helping to pay for the terminal budget issues, that financial difficulties that are over there, is that?
Well, the increase is not designed to help pay for the overruns at the terminal project. I mean, this was conceived years before the project ever experienced any trouble. Unfortunately, it's fallen to this administration to implement the land increase, but so the timing is perhaps unfortunate, but it was never intended to make up the difference on the terminal.
Mr. Chairman, the last question related to that, is there any chance of this increase being phased in over a period of time as opposed to taking effect a month and a half from now?
Well, we're limited by the regulations. The commissioner would have the option of rescinding his fee increase, but we couldn't change the phase in strategy per the regulations.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Wagner.
Yeah, you said something that ran a red flag up in my mind. Sounds like the same thing happened in the dairy business with the independent dairymen compared to the big corporate dairies. So FedEx and UPS are saying increase the rates. They're asking for the increase. Why would, you know, it seems to me like they're asking for the increase because they can pass along the consumer. The little guy's going to have a tough time. It's going to put the little guy more out of business than the big guy. Is there a reason they would come to you and ask for a rate increase?
Well, specifically, they were looking, the signatory airlines, and it's not just FedEx, it's also some of the Alaska-based carriers as well requesting it. The airlines that do the lion's share of fee paying are interested in diversifying the fee base. You know, FedEx is not in competition with Ketchum, for example, so there's no advantage to FedEx driving that company out of business. They're not in competition with anyone, perhaps on the field except UPS. So, I don't think there's a conspiracy by, you know, the big corporations to try to put the little guys out of business. I think really what drove it is that the land rent had come so far out of line with reality that there was a need for a change.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, again going back to one of my prior lives out here at the Juneau Airport, I can tell you that when the Juneau Airport tried to raise land rents, the state airports were pointed to as being such a good deal, and that we shouldn't have raised them at Juneau because this is what the state is charging, and it's so small.
Senator Wagner?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, you know, as you look at the administration that's in place now, certainly his push is to try and have some type of economic development and economic opportunity out there being enhanced. I think to go ahead, or at least what I'm perceiving, is to go ahead and have increases like this where you've got businesses that are on the edge for other expenses that are out there that we don't even have any control over. But you being, I'm assuming, Commissioner, that he was pointing to you, that having those restrictions where you've got to be, you don't have the ability to go ahead and incrementally bring up the rates. It sounds like there ought to be something put in statute if we can't change the regulations to allow you that freedom to go and do that, so that these people that have got bookings for this summer are not unfairly, I mean, we can look at a number of 135 operators operating off the lake that, you know, are in dire straits. Ellison Air is over there having, is probably not going to be in business next year. Certainly, we can look at a number of others that are out there, but I wonder what your thoughts were on that.
I don't know whether statutorily we could put a phase in the regulations, but we could look at that possibility, and maybe we would need some statutory basis for doing that. Changing the regulation is not a fast process. How long did it take to get Title 17 put together?
Unfortunately, about 13 years.
That's a different issue, though.
Yeah,
well, it's opening that can of worms again.
But we could look at that, Senator.
I hope that and I intend to address his. We've had hearings on small operators out there in Anchorage transportation in the past 2 or 3 years. We're going to have another one, and hopefully some of his. I just for Senator Olson's, you know, I have this raw land. I lease for about 20 for 60,000 square feet. I lease it for $2,500 a month. And I don't know what that equates to per square foot, but I see the calculators are going.
I think it's more than 9 cents.
I believe it's probably. And this is near the airport. Well, it's on Arctic. Thank you. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, the last question that I have for this group is, how fast do you think these bonds can be sold? Because as we looked at the chart yesterday, certainly the concern that a cash flow problem may be quickly arising.
Well, I think perhaps going back to Mr. Sura's example of the Dallas, what was it, $1.5 billion that was oversubscribed 2.5 times, I think, you know, the market will snap them right up. How quickly we can get them to the market is beyond my expertise, but I don't think getting them sold before September is a problem, but maybe Mr. Buttan could address that.
Okay. I'm assuming that's DFW and not Love Field or something.
Yeah. Well, that was my assumption. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to go ahead and call Mr. Buttan.
Tom Buttan, Alaska Department of Revenue and State Bond Committee also, in that the State Bond Committee issues the debt.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Buttan, we just had a question related to bond issues and how fast they can be sold to you. Can you give us a quick answer to the question?
Well, I'm sure not as up to speed on this airport revenue perspective issue as I might be. Typically, the feasibility study is the first component. When that's done, then drafting the resolution amendment, the official statement, talking to the rating agencies and obtaining a rating, those things are done well within a 60-day period, but I haven't looked at this to see if the feasibility study is completely done, and so I honestly don't have a very good answer. In the past, in the issues I was involved in, Series F and G, they were at this stage, the feasibility study would have been done, and so if it was a rush to get the money because being driven by the construction season, then certainly a 60-day period would have been required from the getting the, receiving the go-ahead to actually pricing the bonds.
Mr. Chairman, continue. Mr. Boutin, you talked about some of the bonding issues that we're having problems in the past with the Department of Revenue, and you talked about a document being brought in. I was wondering if you presented it this time.
Well, your question yesterday, the only situation I know about, or that I've ever heard about, that just one situation, and I didn't bring this in to be dramatic. The State Bond Committee minutes from back then have been archived. However, many years ago, I did look at them, and that led to producing this thing to put on the wall. This was in 1975, and I actually have the official statement, probably the one remaining copy of this official statement, in the state, from that issue. And it was to build the international terminal. And back years ago, when I looked through the minutes, what occurred was that the state got out ahead of the airlines. And the state went ahead and issued these bonds, and the airlines were not on board. And so the bonds had to immediately be defeased. So this was a screw-up on the part of the state in 1975. And so the document here, one of these is the act by the legislature from 1975 authorizing the issuance of the bonds. And then a copy of the bond itself, and then a letter from Governor Hammond to the talking quite promoting the bonds from Governor Hammond talking about the pipeline construction and the airport's health and whatnot. And then a letter to the President of the Senate from the governor. Almost an apologetic letter saying that it's, although these bonds have been sold, the Commissioner of Public Works has determined that it is not in the best interest of the state to construct the planned addition to the Anchorage Airport. The state's bond council has advised us we are obligated as part of our contract with the bondholders to construct the facility. He has suggested that as an alternative way, we may negate this obligation by depositing with the bond issue trustee cash for the purpose of United States government obligations sufficient to pay off the principal and interest of the bonds, which is defeasance. So your question last night, this is the only thing I know about that, that rings a bell, and it happened in 1975. And the reason I think it was my idea, but it could have been the fellow I was working for, but the both of us thought it was a good idea to memorialize this a little bit, because it was a screw-up, and we really didn't, you know, just so that people in the future would perhaps be more cautious than somebody was in 1975.
No further questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, just briefly, on page 17 of the financial information that got passed out yesterday is the answer to Senator Olson's question about the mechanics of getting the bond to the market.
Can I get a motion? I'd move Senate Bill 216 with individual recommendations and attached finance fiscal note.
Any objections? Hearing none. So moved. And we adjourn.